You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Well, this seems bad. Apple announced last week that they're going to be installing new software on iPhones and other Apple devices, installing it on new devices before they're sold, and remotely installing it on existing ones, including the phone in your pocket right now. And this new software is going to scan the photos stored on your iPhone or iCloud for known and registered images of child porn. And quoting the Washington Post here, the new software will also, quote, scan messages sent using Apple's iMessage service for text and photos that are inappropriate for minors. You can still send text messages that are inappropriate for minors, but if you send a photo or text deemed sexually explicit to a minor, it will be blurred. And the minor will have to click on it to unblur it, but first they'll be warned that their parents are going to be notified if they click on it. The story at the Post continues, Apple's move raises new questions about the nature of smartphones and who really owns the computers in our pockets, because the new software will perform scans on its users' devices without their knowledge or explicit consent. Okay, this is when people jump up and say, hey, if you're not doing anything wrong, if you don't have anything to hide, you don't have anything to worry about. And Apple wants us to know that there's only a 1 in a trillion chance of a person being incorrectly flagged, incorrectly accused of making or distributing child porn or grooming a minor for sex. And if a photo or message of yours is flagged, it will be reviewed by humans, by Apple employees, not by software, before the cops are called. And those Apple employees would never collect or share or post the non-criminal photos of yours that might have crossed their desks. 1 in a trillion makes it sound like it couldn't really happen to anyone, being incorrectly flagged and reported to authorities for sharing or storing images of child porn or grooming a minor for sex. But with hundreds of billions of text messages being exchanged every day and trillions of photos already stored on people's phones, doesn't that mean, I'm terrible at math, but isn't that Apple essentially saying, you know, there's a 1 in a trillion chance of an innocent person being caught up in this, like Apple saying hundreds or thousands of people every year are going to be flagged, and dozens or hundreds may be falsely accused of distributing child porn or grooming minors for sex. Those are accusations that have the power to destroy a person's life. And I can easily imagine scenarios where people with nothing to hide, people who've done nothing wrong, are falsely accused. Setting aside the possibility that you may have an innocent photo of your own kid in a bathtub as a toddler that bears a close enough resemblance to a known CSA image, that is, child sexual abuse image, that photo of yours gets flagged, and setting aside all the grandmas out there swapping photos of their grandchildren at bath time, what about the guy who goes on a hookup app and swaps explicit messages and photos with someone he thinks is an adult because that person said they were an adult? Turns out that person is a minor, and the messages that adult thought he was swapping with another adult are being forwarded to that minor's parents and then on to the authorities. Let's say some troll sends you a text message from a burner phone or DMs you from some throwaway Instagram account, and that DM includes an image of the sexual abuse of a child. That image exists on your phone now, doesn't it? I have about 800 DMs from strangers on my Instagram account right now that I haven't looked at. I don't know what's in there. Is Apple going to be able to distinguish between an image lurking on your phone because some asshole sent it to you without your knowledge or your consent, and images you've downloaded and stored and shared? Let's say a 17-year-old boy has a 16-year-old girlfriend, and that boy turns 18, and suddenly he's an adult dating a minor, and the text messages he's exchanging with his girlfriend start getting flagged, and his girlfriend's parents learn from those text messages that their daughter is sexually active. You know, I predict that the first prosecution of someone as a result of Apple's new policy here isn't going to be a child pornographer, but a black teenage boy with a white girlfriend whose parents are racist. Arguing that tech companies should be able to preemptively search our phones to catch criminals. And I think making or sharing child porn is a fucking crime, and the people who do it should be caught and prosecuted. But if you can make a case for searching all of our phones to catch those criminals, how do you argue against the police being able to search our homes whenever they want? Because odds are, not just good, odds are 100%. So not odds at all, but certainties. Odds are that someone somewhere is committing a heinous crime in their home right now. And if the police could search our homes at will, or could install cameras in our homes with AI technology that scan our homes 24/7, observing everything we say and everything we do, yeah, we could catch a lot of people who are committing heinous crimes. Look, the intentions here are good, golden. I get it. People who make or share images and videos of children being raped need to be caught, and adults who were raped as children on camera feel violated and re-traumatized when those images are circulated and shared and reposted. I ache for them. I do. But creating a backdoor on all our devices, reading all of our messages, scanning all of our photos, that's not just a slippery slope, as the Electronic Freedom Foundation pointed out in a press release last week. That is a fully built system just waiting for external pressure to be abused. The abuse cases are easy to imagine, the Electronic Freedom Foundation continues. Governments that outlaw homosexuality might require the classifier to be trained to restrict apparent LGBTQ plus content, or an authoritarian regime might demand that the classifier, Apple in this case, be able to spot popular satirical images or protest flyers and pull them down. It's a system being built with good intentions, just waiting there, sitting there on a shelf, ready to be abused by authoritarian regimes, which are no longer some distant hypothetical threat. More and more people all over the world are living under authoritarian regimes. And the rest of us, including us right here in the United States, we are living under the very real threat of an authoritarian takeover right now, right here. On that bummer note, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's. And coming up on the Magnum, comedian Jen Kirkman joins me to talk about women in comedy and women comedians going to play comedy clubs where they're toxic exes might be sitting in the audience and what women comedians can do about that. We also talk about other stuff with Jen Kirkman. She is hilarious. We had a great time. She is on the Magnum that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. If you've always wanted to see what everybody else is really doing in bed, you can at Make Love Not Porn. Pro sex, pro porn, pro knowing the difference. Watch the wonderful sex real people are really having in the real world at makelovenotporn.com. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra mental health support. For $100 off your first month, go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey Dan, I have a bit of a situation where I am seeing an ex of mine and it's been going really well. However, he's still kind of entangled with his ex and their child. They saw each other for 3 years and the little girl was 3 when they started dating. She's now 11. And as a result of that, I'm a secret. So he literally wanted to take me to a hotel room. I would just like don't feel comfortable with like constantly being this sort of secret mistress. And it was mostly out of nervousness that if she were to come by, that she would flip out and not let him see the child. So he's sort of expressed to me that like it has to be this way because if she were to find out about me, then she would freak out and maybe he can't see the little girl, and I get that. I admire it. I respect it. However, I'm starting to get kind of grossed out by it because I don't want to be a secret. And we were taking a nap on the couch the other day, and there was a knock at the door from an Amazon delivery, and both of us almost jumped out of our skin, thinking like, is she here? And I don't know. I feel like me making an ultimatum is me almost being selfish because I don't think I deserve to say, like, I don't think you need to tell her because I don't want to be a secret. And I also kind of want to be a priority in my person's life, but I feel like I'm being like a selfish jerk by asking for that. So I don't know if I am.
Just so we're clear, the guy that you're dating now is single. We're talking about his ex. He was with her for 3 years. When he first got together with her, this kid was 3 years old. And now this kid is 11 years old, which means, if I'm doing the math correctly here, your current boyfriend and his ex that he co-parented this child with for a while broke up 5 years ago. Met when the kid was three, broke up 3 years later, kid's now 11. So what's going on here is your boyfriend's ex-girlfriend is demanding that he remain celibate for the rest of his life or not get into a relationship with anybody else for the rest of his life as a condition of being able to see this kid, that a kid whose life he's been a part of now for 8 years, a kid who may see him as a parental figure, a father figure, a kid you say that he's helped to raise. Man, that is some deeply shitty behavior. That is taking a kid hostage. That's putting your own petty, small, shitty needs over the best interest of your own child in an effort to control your ex. Ugh. Before making a decision about what you should do here, and I think you are perfectly within your rights to issue an ultimatum that you don't want to be the dirty little secret, that you're not going to sneak around, that you're not going to submit to this ultimatum that's been issued to him yourself. You're not going to settle for this kind of treatment. I would ask you to take a step back, take a look from 30,000 feet, and look at the child. What does the child need? If the child's parent, custodial parent, the mother of this child, is this selfish and manipulative, it's probably a really great thing. I mean, it's understandable that the guy you're seeing is no longer with this person, if they're that selfish, that manipulative. It's also probably a really good thing for that kid, that child, that he is still in her, his or her, I don't remember, in their life. And so if you can suck it up for, oh my God, 6 or 7 more years until that child is an adult, that's a big ask. But maybe at least for another year or two, you could suck it up. Maybe you could give him an ultimatum that's got a 12 or 24 month time limit on it, where he can begin to work on his ex to get her to a place where she has to accept that he is going to have relationships with other women, hypothetical women, women who do not yet exist, right, in the future, and roll you out eventually, bring you out of the shadows. You no longer have to sneak around if he works on it for 12 months or 24 months. So there isn't an abrupt cutting off. So he doesn't suddenly disappear from the life of this child who I'm guessing really needs him in their life if this is the mom they're saddled with, a parent who would weaponize access to that child to the benefit of that child, access to that child by someone who played a parental role in that child's life, someone that child probably wants in their life and needs in their life in order to control their ex. Oh my gosh. I know I'm asking a lot of you here, and you don't have, you can totally disregard my advice. You don't have to take this kid's feelings or needs into consideration. You are allowed to be selfish about this. I say this as someone who dated a few closet cases in my time. It is no fun. I get it, to be someone's dirty little secret. It is no fun. I've been there, jumping up off the couch when there's a knock on the door. I've been there. No fun. I understand if you don't want to do that shit anymore, but I would pin a gold star on you if you did that shit for another 12 or 24 months, because after taking as impassioned a view, as impassioned a look as you could at the situation, if you decided it was something you were willing to do for that kid.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth. I'm a cis straight woman in my 30s, and I'm calling to get some advice about how to give men feedback on oral sex. I previously had a short-term relationship with a guy who was recently separated when we met. It took a little while for the sexual aspect of the relationship to get going, and due to some circumstances, we were never able to get into a sexual groove. When the sex finally began, I learned that he struggled to stay hard once a condom was applied. Unfortunately, I'm unable to be on the pill or any hormonal birth control. I began exploring alternatives, but in the meantime, the focus shifted away from PIV and on to me getting off from oral. The problem was that his technique wasn't working for me. I wanted to give him instruction, but sadly, it wasn't as simple as right there, softer, to the left. He was really off base, and I could tell I would just never get off with his approach, which involved a lot of intense sucking on my clit and licking up and down. I think I need more pressing and like a very focused pressure on my clit in a very small circular, maybe even counterclockwise motion. I only know the latter from a comment an ex once made, but I really struggle with explaining that and providing instruction. I sympathize with men because it isn't straightforward. And from what I hear from friends, if it's not happening for them, they'll just give up and initiate sex, so it's possible men don't even get much instruction on it. In this context, where the guy's already finding it difficult to stay hard, I felt even more self-conscious giving him constructive criticism on his oral technique, and I always feel like I'm navigating a fragile ego in this area, especially when it's with a new partner. Soon after a night when he tried endlessly to get me off to no avail, he ended things, and I never knew if it was because of that issue. Regardless, I just don't feel like I know how to broach the subject in the moment without making it really awkward, what words or phrases to use. Any advice is welcome, and I'd really like to hear from other women about how they have given men instruction on oral sex, and also from men how they'd like to be told how to do it differently in a way that wouldn't deflate them or kill the moment. Would they rather it in the moment or afterward? Any experiences with giving or getting useful feedback would be great. Thanks.
Okay, so the guy who is in your bed, between your legs, eating your pussy, he doesn't know how to eat your pussy. I know how to eat your pussy because you told me. I could eat your pussy right now. Pressing, focused pressure, small circular motions, counterclockwise. It's a little fucked up that the fag with the podcast has a better idea about how to eat your pussy than the straight guy who is just in your bed, just between your legs, because you could tell me, but you couldn't bring yourself to tell him. You could tell me and all my listeners know how to eat your pussy now, but the guy you're fucking doesn't know how to eat your pussy. It's not constructive criticism. It is helpful direction. If you tell someone how you like it. And I know we're supposed to pretend that eating pussy is some great mystery, whereas sucking a dick is obvious. But you know what? Sucking a dick ain't obvious either. Some guys like a lot of suction pressure on the head. Some guys don't. Some guys like a tight airlock seal, and some guys like the lips to be loose. Some guys like you pull on the balls a little bit. Some guys like you to cup the balls. Some guys don't want you to touch their balls. Some guys like a finger in the butt. Some guys don't like a finger in the butt. You find those things out when you suck a dick by asking or by doing and weighing the feedback you're getting, whether they seem to be enjoying it. Now, sometimes you wind up in bed with somebody, I say this is a person with a dick, and I had to shift to sucking dick here as an example because I have no experience actually eating pussy, even though I know how to eat your pussy. Sometimes you're with a guy who does it wrong and isn't like taking in your feedback, and you have to say, don't pull my balls. You have to say, don't suck the head of my cock so hard. And it's helpful because you don't want them expending all this time and effort trying to get you off doing something that isn't working. And they don't want to expend all that time and effort doing something that isn't working. They don't want to fly blind. That time he ate your pussy forever and couldn't get you off and left feeling frustrated, he has a right to feel a little bit frustrated because of the way men and women are. Ultimately, the patriarchy is to blame that in the moment you were too inhibited to say anything to him because you were afraid of making his dick fall off by saying something that he might, because of fragile male ego, perceive as critical. But he needed information in that moment. Information you didn't give him, but you gave me. So what do? In the future, you disinhibit. In the future, you err on the side of telling the guy what he needs to know so he doesn't waste your time and his. And I know you can do it because you literally just did it. Actually, let's go to the tape.
I think I need more pressing and like a very focused pressure on my clit in a very small circular, maybe even counterclockwise motion.
There, what you said right there. You did it. You can do it. You can say it out loud. You didn't hem. You didn't haw. You didn't have to force the words out of your mouth. You said it, and you said it to a man. I know you said it to a gay man. A gay man is never going to eat your pussy. A gay man that you're not in the same room with, but you said it to a man. Good practice for saying it to the men who actually need to hear it. Your sex partner, your next sex partner. Say it to him like you said it to me. And if you can't bring yourself to say it to him, just go to the tape. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Make Love Not Porn. Pro sex, pro porn, pro knowing the difference. If porn is the Hollywood movie, Make Love Not Porn is the documentary, a unique window onto the funny, messy, wonderful ways we all have sex in the real world. Look, I am asked all the time, the question comes up a lot, where can I find porn that I don't have to feel bad about watching, where no one is being exploited, where everyone is having a good time? Make Love Not Porn. That is where you find that kind of porn. Make Love Not Porn, social sex videos shared by people like you, celebrate real world bodies, real world awkwardness, real world love, lovemaking, sex, passion, desire. Make Love Not Porn's curators watch every video submitted before publishing, and half of what you pay to subscribe goes to the contributors or the Make Love Not Porn stars. It's like how-to videos on YouTube, but for sex and for fun. Members say Make Love Not Porn saved their marriages and relationships, transformed their ability to communicate with their partners, expanded their repertoires. Get one free video when you email savage@makelovenotporn.com. You'll definitely be inspired to subscribe, and you might be inspired to become a Make Love Not Porn star yourself. Check it out at makelovenotporn.com and send that email, send it now, to savage@makelovenotporn.com.
Hi, Dan and Nancy and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. I'm a 41-year-old bi male, and I'm in a long-term relationship that is now 15 years old. I've been married for 12, and I have two young kids with my partner, who's a woman, and she's also bi. Our relationship is really gotten bad over the last few years since we've had our kids. We have a 5-year-old daughter and a 2.5-year-old son, and we both really love the children so much, and you know, it really is the reason why we're still together at this point. You know, we're essentially co-parenting together, but don't really have that connection anymore like many couples like us with young kids. But you know, we were having some issues before the kids came along, and mainly about kind of like where to live and, you know, what exactly we kind of wanted to do after graduate school. You know, we've been through counseling now with like 3 different counselors, and it just really doesn't seem to be changing. You know, there's just a ton of resentment that we have with each other and can't really connect. And basically, you know, I'm at this point where I just don't know what the best move is. I mean, I know for me personally that the right move is to not be in the same type of relationship that I'm in now with my wife. Like, it's not good. We fight a lot, and there's nothing physical or anything like that, but it's just a lot of like verbal conflict and poor communication and just like modeling behavior between each other that I really don't like to show to our kids. Like, I don't want them to think that our relationship is normal, but I also know that we are able to support each other in these really concrete logistical ways. Like, we live in an expensive area, and we finally were able to buy a home together, and it's in like a good neighborhood with good schools, and basically like neither one of us would be able to afford this home or in this area independently. I don't know what to do. Like, I know there's this tipping point where it's actually better for our kids, for my wife and I, to separate, but I just don't know if we're there yet. The kids, you know, are happy and healthy for the most part, but they also, you know, they fight between themselves quite a bit. And I hear them sometimes saying things to each other that I know they've heard from us. You know, I just really don't know what to do. And I just want to do right by my children and myself.
Yeah, it's not good if you're seeing or overhearing your kids fight with each other using the kind of contemptuous language that you and your wife address each other with when you fight, that's a bad sign that you probably shouldn't still be together, that it's not in the best interest of the kids if you're still together. If the relationship is a high conflict one, then it's impacting your kids and who they are and how they treat other people. That's a sign that you should probably call it. Difficult question, though. It's expensive to get divorced. It's expensive to have two households. I would encourage you and your wife, while you have these conversations about ending your marriage, which really just radically changes how you define your relationship. You're still going to be in a relationship. Sometimes people get divorced and then they suddenly have a really great relationship with their ex-spouse because all of their expectations change. Suddenly, they're not accountable to each other in the same way. They don't feel implicated by each other in the same ways. They're free to do or see other people if that's what they want to do. And suddenly they have a great relationship and they tap back into the rapport they may have had early in the relationship when they were friends. And it seems to me that sometimes you might want to just skip to the divorce and go to that point where you just radically alter all of your expectations and assumptions about what you owe each other. And it seems to me that's something that people should be able to do. We can stay married for economic reasons, can stay married to parent, and maybe we can drain the conflict from the relationship if we just let go of all of these sometimes toxic expectations that people can have of the person who is their officially designated legal spouse. But if that's not possible, then divorce. But because economically that's going to be a big lift for you guys in the area that you live, and maybe you don't want to disrupt your children's lives. You say you picked the place where you live and struggled to buy the house that you have now because there are good schools. Well, then I would advise you and your wife to look into what's called a nesting arrangement, which is rather than both parents moving out, both parents getting new places, and the kids bopping back and forth between mom and dad's, you keep the home, you keep the family home. And the parents, instead of the kids going back and forth, the parents go back and forth. You guys get an apartment together, a small apartment together, because the kids are never going to be in it or they don't have to be in it, where when it's your week off, you go and live in that apartment. And then when it's your wife's week off, you go live at the house with the kids and she goes and stays in the apartment. And you guys trade places. Again, rather than the kids going back and forth, the parents go back and forth. Most of what I've read about these arrangements, these nesting arrangements, suggests that they should be temporary, that as the kids adjust to the end of the parents' marriage, that having the familiarity of the family home, even if the family is, it's not the family coming apart, even if their parents are no longer going to be married to each other, that can really help the kids with that transition. And it's usually framed as still a transition. And ultimately the family home has got to go. But there are cases where people indefinitely held onto the family home. And instead of having to maintain two households that were large enough for both parents to have both the kids over, they or the kid over, they had one apartment, even a studio apartment that was for mom or dad or dad or dad or mom, depending on whose week on or off it was. You could make that work. If you can get to a place, I think, with your soon-to-be ex-wife where you have in divorce what you don't seem to be able to have right now in marriage, and that is a low-conflict relationship. Whatever it takes to get there, to that low-conflict point, that's what's in the best interests of your kids. And you should work constructively with your wife on getting there. That might mean going to a fourth counselor, but rather than seeing a couples counselor, you might want to see instead an uncoupling counselor. Props to Gwyneth Paltrow. It's good to have friends that you can talk to when you're going through something, when you're experiencing issues. But our friends don't always give us the best advice sometimes. I remember a long time ago confiding in a friend about a relationship problem that I was having with my then boyfriend, and my friend encouraged me strongly. Made a really good case for me breaking up with my boyfriend. And I found out months later that he did that because he wanted to date my boyfriend. So friends aren't always the best source for good, practical, unbiased advice or counsel. Getting that kind of unbiased feedback, getting that advice from a licensed professional as opposed to or in addition to your friends can be refreshing and really rewarding. It can be the check from an unbiased outside third-party expert that you need. That's why I recommend all the time therapy on this show. Talkspace makes it easy to match with a licensed therapist and to schedule live video sessions all from the comfort of your device. You can start messaging your therapist the same day you sign up. Whether you're experiencing depression, anxiety, or other problems, relationship problems like I was back in the day, Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform to help you sort through any issue. Thousands of licensed therapists are available for you to match with. Talkspace therapists are experts, dozens of specialties, including LGBTQ issues, relationships, and more. And they're there to help you start feeling better. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code SAVAGE. Friends are good to have. I'm a big advocate of friends around here. Therapists, also good to have in addition to friends. Again, match with a licensed therapist and you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code SAVAGE. That's $100 off when you use the code SAVAGE at Talkspace.com.
Hi, Dan, 30-year-old straight cis lady. Ever since I was younger, I've had this like very strong identification sexually with like gay men. I like my youngest sexual fantasies all involved gay men, not necessarily where I was like fantasizing about watching them, but where I was, you know, picturing myself as a dude with other dudes. And, you know, I would even like stuff my underwear with socks at night, so it felt like I had a dick. And then, you know, even something like as soon as I started getting boobs, which I got really early and they ended up being big, I was disgusted by them. And I even ended up getting a breast reduction in college. And, you know, people weren't really talking about body dysmorphia at the time, so I didn't have the words for it. But now, looking back, I realize that's definitely what it was. Like, I remember trying to be like, how small can we go? Like, wanting probably to really just have no boobs at all, but not having the language for that. So romantically and day-to-day, I do feel totally normal in my body and fine as a straight woman dating, you know, straight men. But sexually, I, you know, sometimes just picture myself having a dick and I'm really cock focused in bed. Like, I've also wondered if I just have like a dick fetish, whether it's me having the dick, there being dicks on me. Like, dicks are just a huge part of my sexuality. I know there isn't necessarily a term for everything, but, you know, I sexually do feel a little queer. But I don't want to take that word on or that identity on for myself, since I am able to just kind of get by as a cis woman. But then other than just being kinky or having like a dick fetish, I don't really know like how to identify this. And, you know, I'm lucky to have had lots of like really open partners where I can talk about this and, you know, play it out in the bedroom. But yeah, I would just like to know, I guess, more if you know anything more about something like this, like maybe normally or like in your day-to-day life feel fine in your body, but sexually maybe feel more like not cis.
Sexual orientation and gender identity industrial complex has been hard at work for the last 20 years coming up with terms and labels for everyone. And guess what? There is one for you, and I think you should embrace it. Girl fag. A girl fag is a cis woman who identifies with gay culture or gay sex and feels like a gay man. You sound, when you talk about dick, when you wax poetic about dick, kind of like a gay dude. Not that all gay dudes have dicks. Not that all dicks have gay dudes. You can be a gay dude without a dick. You can be into gay dudes who don't have dicks, or you can be agnostic on the whole dick thing and like dudes with or without dicks. But dicks usually come with dudes, and gay dudes usually come with dicks. And there's a strong association between dicks and gay dudes. And you're just kind of a girl fag, and that's great. what you described, the way you, what you felt growing up, sounds like gender dysphoria. Most people who experience gender dysphoria ultimately come to peace or terms with the sex they were assigned at birth. Not everyone with gender dysphoria transitions. Not everyone who transitions has gender dysphoria. So you haven't done anything wrong, and it's not that you aren't living authentically. It is possible that if you were growing up now, if you're 13 or 14 years old now, you might transition and that would be fine and you would live as a gay male. But it doesn't sound like you are publicly identified as a cisgender female and you're very upset about that and you're still experiencing dysphoria or the harm that can come with, but not, doesn't always come with, gender dysphoria. You sound fully at peace. Sounds like you're just looking for a label. And like I said, the sexual orientation and gender minority industrial complex has been hard at work coming up with labels for everybody, and you have one, girl fag. And if you want to call yourself, when you're fucking around with a cisgender dude that you're dating, you want to call yourself a gay man or have him call you a gay man, or like so many gay men do, like to be called fag when you're fucking around and having sex and sucking his dick or making him suck yours, because you can have all the dick you want. You can strap on as many dicks as you care to. You have my blessing. No committee of gay men is going to burst into the room and yank the dick out of your drawer or slap the dick out of your mouth at that moment when you tell your boyfriend to call you a fag. You don't have to worry about it. You can play with identity. If the gender nonconforming trans movements have taught us anything, it's that gender is a social construct and we're all allowed to fuck around with that. Construct our own genders, deconstruct our own genders, and play and engage and eroticize. Sounds to me like this is deeply erotic for you. You have an erotic response, as we all do, to our own bodies and to the bodies of the people that we sleep with or identify with. And that is legitimate. So please enjoy dick. Enjoy thinking about having a dick. Enjoy thinking about being a cockhound kind of gay guy whenever you want. And you don't have to reconcile those identities. They can exist in you simultaneously. They can exist in you side by side. The cisgender woman that you are comfortable being and moving through the world perceived as, but also that inner cock-hungry, big-dicked gay guy you also know yourself to be, you big girl fag you. At omgyes.com, you'll learn from the sexual discoveries already made by over 20,000 women ages 18 to 95, because at omgyes.com, what you'll find are the findings from the largest ever body of research into women's pleasure, all in one place. omgyes.com will give you the insight and the inspiration you need to explore and to try new techniques to make you feel good. It's for women, partners, and couples to enjoy and learn from together. With omgyes.com, you pay once, one time for lifetime access. It is not a subscription site. And it takes just 10 minutes to learn each technique through simple, tasteful, and crystal clear demonstrations and graphics. You are going to benefit from this. Trust me, you are going to benefit from these new findings tonight. You'll benefit from them tonight, and you will benefit from them forever. In a recent study, 95% of OMGS users experienced new kinds of pleasure inspired by their explorations and what they learned at omgyes.com. Wired said, and I quote, "OMGyes is indeed great. The design is state-of-the-art and the infographics are smart." So check out OMGyes to see how we finally have the openness and the research we need that you needed, a clear-headed look at the many nuances of women's pleasure. Savage Love listeners get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you, again by going to omgyes.com/savage for a discount on your one-time payment to access everything at omgyes.com forever.
Hey, Dan. I was just attacked by a friend of a friend at a bar for being racist. And being a half-breed, I've never really considered myself to be racist before. But I had mentioned earlier in the evening that I am attracted to Aryan men. that being, you know, tall white men. And that's just who I'm attracted to. And I feel like I can't control that, but it is what it is. Anyway, this person took it as an affront to them, I suppose. And it must have triggered something in them, because then they took it upon themselves to try to infect my mind and pick a fight with me and get me out of the bar as quickly as possible. Is this racist to be attracted to a certain type of person?
You're allowed to be attracted to the people that you're attracted to. You don't have to sleep with anyone that you're not attracted to. What you got to do is figure out a way to talk about the people you're attracted to without using incendiary racist language that's going to piss other people within hearing distance off. And a word like Aryan, popularized by National Socialists, by the Nazi Party, tossed around a lot in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Yeah, that is a word that a lot of people are going to have an intense reaction to when you describe essentially the type of guys you're attracted to as the master race. Yeah, no. Drop that word from your vocabulary. If you describe yourself as a half-breed, I assume you're being ironic about being of mixed race. And maybe you had a lot of grief thrown at you about being mixed race. And maybe you're using half-breed in the same way that a person of color might use the N-word. But maybe you're not someone that is perceived as mixed race easily in a crowd, in bar light, and tossing that word around in a context-free environment in front of a bunch of people who really don't know you or know that you're being ironic is going to piss some people off and get you frog marched out of a bar, particularly in combination with Aryan, which is kind of what sounds like happened here. So you need to think a little bit more about what you're doing. It's fine and not fine that you're only attracted to white guys. If that's who you're attracted to, that's who you're attracted to. You don't have to sleep with people you're not attracted to as a form of reparations, right? You do have to own, though, that a racist society and racist beauty standards shaped that, most likely shaped your desires. It's really hard to unwind that. It is possible, and you can do it. There are some people out there who have convinced themselves they're only attracted to one type, and not necessarily just white people who've convinced themselves of this, or just being attracted to white people that people convince themselves of. And you're actually, if you peel back the layers, you will discover that you're attracted to many more types of people. I'm not just talking about race here. Many more types of people generally and broadly than you've allowed yourself, or the culture has allowed you to know, to realize. And in a sense, that is the culture, not just depriving other people of your company, that's the culture depriving you of other people, the experiences that you missed out on, the connections that you missed out on, the relationships, perhaps lifelong relationship that you missed out on because you had been brainwashed not to perceive, not just the attractiveness of other people objectively, but not to even perceive your own attraction to other people, because you repeated often enough that I'm only attracted to blank types until your pussy believed it. Think about it. Not saying, I'm not telling everybody you have to sleep with people that you are not attracted to. I'm just telling you from personal experience, if you think about it, if you interrogate your desires, you may discover that you're attracted to a lot more people, different types of people, than you realize. Getting back to you, caller, don't use words like Aryan. Don't use an expression, even in reference to yourself, like half-breed. You are going to piss people off using language like that. And I'm glad that you pissed people off. I'm glad there were people around at that moment who were mad at you for using language like that, because it is not okay and you needed to know that. And now you know it and you're never going to do that again. You're never going to use the word Aryan to describe the type of guys you're attracted to ever again. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. Juniper Glass tweets, The woman who wasn't sure she was bi because she's not into pussy, even if she likes being sexual with women and really prefers partners with dicks, regardless of their gender, that woman might like reading Girls with Slingshots, a webcomic where the character Jamie goes through a similar self-discovery journey and lands somewhere between above-the-waist lesbian and whatever sexual. Above-the-waist lesbian, what a great expression, reminds me of a straight-identified submissive guy into BDSM who told me he did do S&M with guys. He said he was bisexual from the waist up and the knees down. And I said, oh, that's great. That means you suck dick then. And he said, no, I guess I'm straight from the Adam's apple to the tip of my nose too. So I fucked him in the ear. Fueled by indie tweets, there's been a lot of talk on the Savage Lovecast recently about follower discretion on Instagram. Does someone want to clue in ScoMo, the Australian Prime Minister, that his following list is public and that we can see he follows an IG model spam page? I follow some male models on Instagram myself and some male ballet dancers too for the eye candy. So I don't want to sex shame the Prime Minister of Australia, Scott Morrison, for wanting to look at hot women. But I will shame him. I will participate gleefully in shaming him for being a deeply shitty human being and climate change denialist who fought against marriage equality. Kill Cookie tweets, came here to rant about the massage dude in the latest Savage Lovecast. But of course, at Fake Dan Savage put all my thoughts in my brain, so he said what I was thinking. Can't wait to hear listener calls on this one. Feels creepy, that call. Also, maybe fake. Maybe fake is to advice columns and advice podcasters and our readers and listeners what a favorite blankie or stuffed animal is to a toddler. It is very soothing to think a particular question may be fake. I do it all the time. Doesn't stop me from answering them, though. Every Q is just a really good hypothetical for every listener, save one. But yeah, sometimes telling myself, hey, maybe this is fake, makes me feel better too. All right. Thank you for your tweets and your posts to Instagram and other social media about the Lovecast this week. We really appreciate it. And now listener response calls.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling a response to the caller with the girlfriend with bad acid reflux. I have bad acid reflux that I'm pretty open about. I see a doctor for it, and I have it relatively under control. My husband told me after we got married that sometimes I have really bad breath that seems like acid reflux. I still have no idea when it happens. We figured out it's the first symptom of a flare-up before any other symptoms happen. Now he lets me know when it's bad. I then cut out acid reflux triggers. I start taking Pepcid, and I frequently use Tic Tacs. He says the Tic Tacs help. So far, it always clears up my acid reflux after that. Now that we have this data point, my acid reflux has been much better since I can stop it before it gets worse. As a precaution, before every in-person job interview, I take a Tic Tac. He hates telling me that my breath is bad, but I find it to be very useful information. I wish that someone told me about this symptom sooner. We also make fun of it a little bit. But I think as long as the caller is nice about it, my husband's very understanding of my health issues, I really have no problem telling him that my breath is stinky.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to episode 771 and the question about the person who recently got off antidepressants and stopped drinking and then suddenly had, you know, a lesser libido than she was used to. So I was actually surprised you didn't address this, but I think it might have more to do with the alcohol than the antidepressants. It might be that this person is a sexual person and the alcohol was a way that they lost that inhibition and kind of got in the mood or sort of felt out of their body in a way that they felt comfortable participating in sex and the nerves weren't there, and that they're maybe just finding it harder to access that now that they're not drinking. And then maybe it feels a little bit more vulnerable and scary. Or maybe they are an asexual person who the alcohol was a way to put up with sex or to maybe make themselves think that it was fun or that they could participate in it and weren't as bothered by it. And now they're sort of coming to terms with that. So I think the alcohol could be maybe more than the antidepressants.
Hello, response call for the woman whose partner comes too quickly when she gives him head. Can't believe I'm going to sound more Dan Savage than Dan Savage on this one. I think that your advice was great, but I also noticed it sounds like she just really wants to give him head, that she enjoys giving him head. So maybe she needs to broaden her idea of what sex is, and maybe they don't always have to progress to PIV. Maybe sometimes she just enjoys giving him head and he comes quickly, especially since she comes pretty easily from getting eaten out. So maybe he gets her off first and then she gets him off and they call it an early night. So it doesn't always have to be about how to progress the foreplay before PIV. Maybe the, the quote foreplay is the main event sometimes.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? Two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. There are lots of ways to see my Dirty Little Film Festival hump right now. Starting on September 9th, we're heading out on tour in person in theaters to cities throughout the United States and Canada with the 2021 lineup from last spring. We've also got a new Hump's Greatest Hits Volume 4 that will be streaming online starting September 10th. And we're currently streaming a summer movie mashup that has great short films from all of our little festivals. Hump, Spliff, that's our Stoner Film Festival, and Slay, our horror film festival. Go to humpfilmfest.com and grab your tickets. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Jen Kirkman on Twitter at Jen Kirkman. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks.